Check out more great shows at pride48.com.
There. I tell you, man, something was in the water this week. Something in the air, in the water. There was something spooky going on this week.
Live streamers. We're going off.
Goodbye, YouTube.
Goodbye.
I don't think anybody was actually there, but
stop streaming.
Goodbye.
We had a few at one point.
At three, it says.
Mm-hmm.
I am making it unlisted, but we are still live. We are still live. We haven't stopped going live.
We're not streaming anymore. I didn't end it on YouTube, but it will end. I didn't. I can go and I'm not streaming anymore, but I'll end it. Eventually, it would just end. But yeah, it's just done. Well, I just clicked end. That's probably why.
Yeah, I was looking at this thing. What was it called? Gumhub.
Gumhub.
Nope, it's not Gumhub. One moment, please. I have to look at my YouTube history. I was watching this YouTube video earlier, and it was like, this seems like something that Adam would really like. Let me find the history. Oh, I don't want this history. I want my watch history. Watch history.
I don't know, but it is hot up in this mofo. Chat room, there you go. If anyone wasn't watching the video, you can see my 3D printing report.
It's called Gum.
Also, you can see what my computer screen and Daniel and I look like when we're
recording. Called Gum Loop.
Gum Loop?
Gumloop.com. And one of the things, so it's basically like it's plug and play with AI, right? So it's like,
oh,
and you basically, you can trigger things from like emails coming in. It all works off APIs. And so, and it's a monthly fee and you get so many credits, but you can reduce the cost of the credits if you use your own API. So like if you pay for ChatGPT Pro, then you can use your own API keys and it costs less credits than if you're using theirs. Basically, it gives you tools to like the little plug and play tools that you can scrape this website and you give it a URL. You like scrape this website and grab these things and then send that to an AI bot and ask it with this prompt to do something. Then you take the output of that and you send it to, you know, an email or a text and whatever. It's like, but one of the workflows they were showing was basically, here's a YouTube video. Now give me a breakdown of what was talked about. And then give me a TLDR segment where, you recap just in bullet points what was mainly talked about. Pick a thumbnail from it to use. And then, post that to a blog post, whatever. And then also come up with a title for it.
Cool.
And it's like,
it's interesting that because that's what I'm basically going to try to do something like that with agents.
Okay.
Because I want to learn how to create AI agents anyway. Mm-hmm. This N8N is also an automation framework where you can kind of string things together.
Yeah.
And it's open source and you can download it and host it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one is definitely, the other one is definitely a subscription kind of a thing that you would want to use probably for work.
And this one you have for like, you can do AI agent and then you can have different tools and whatever. But
yeah. So cool. Like,
yeah. No, I love that stuff. I love you are correct.
Yeah. No, and it has like that you can make daily flows where it's like, hey, go through my calendar today, pull out all the people that I have meetings with and then give me a one paragraph summary of who they are and what they do and, what department they're with and like stuff like that. So it's like you could have little notes before you go into a meeting. It's like, hey, this is, you're going to be meeting with Sharon. She works in legal or you're going to be working.
Not Sharon.
Right. But then you can do the trick that I like to do with my D&D stuff, which is, because I do all my D&D recap stuff in Notebook LM. But I give it a whole ton of sources. So like we get a bunch of background material as players, like, you know, here's the name of the continents and here's the, you know, the government structure, you know, just like a whole bunch of background information about the world that we're in and, you know, different customs and things that we have to play with. But I like feed all of those into Notebook LM as well as, you know, other cheat sheets of information like, hey, these are the characters, you know, like this character is played by this person, this character is played by that person. And so, so I can get some really cool recap stuff out of,
do you listen to the podcast?
That to me is like a one trick pony. It's like, I get tired of the, it's they all sound, kind of,
it sounds the same. They're not very excited.
No. And they always, and it's always the same thing. Hey, we're really going to dig into that. Oh yeah. Oh, I can't believe that they killed that monster in the last game. It's like, yeah, it was a really close fight. Thank goodness that Cricket pulled out at the end. It's like, well, for a while there, I didn't think she was going to make it. And,
you don't want to pull out. What are you talking about?
Boy, Tabby really plays her well. You know, it's kind of like things, but it's kind of, you know, kind of, anyway, Gum Loop, check it out. It seems like it's right up your alley there for work kind of stuff there. But I was thinking, it's like, because that's really, in our podcast,
because Power Automate really sucks.
It does.
I'm gonna say it is so slow and horrible. And anyway, it may just be the Spit Valve Factory's implementation, or like whatever.
Nope. It's not. But it's not.
Oh my god, at the Spit Valve Factory, I can't get any. Oh, it's just tedious.
Anyway, go ahead. The thing that I have to do with Power Automate is I handle auditing apps and stuff that I write, and. Mm-hmm. So we have to send out email notifications for things, right? And because, anyway, in order to have the email come out from a standard email address, right? To come out from our group email address, right? Instead of just coming out of an email that's like my email address or something like that. We have to use Power Automate to send the email because it has to be my account because I have access to, I can send the email as that other thing. So I have to have Power. So what happens is my apps just write to a Microsoft list and then Power Automate just scan. Anytime a new record shows up in that list, it goes and picks the email template that it's going to use based off of fields that are in that list and, you know, the recipients and stuff like that. But yeah, it's so fucking tedious sometimes because it's like, look, I just want you to go through this spreadsheet and only pull out this one, you know, filter on this thing. Oh, you have to use this really weird fucking filter command that we have no documentation for. And good luck.
Sorry, folks. Hey, Tony, you're getting a tech talk for this one.
That's right.
I feel like Microsoft's, I'm going to say this, but I'm going to be wrong, I'm sure.
Okay.
But I feel like some of their tools and when they release new features, there's not a good way of knowing unless you were like a super Microsoft head and you like listen to Pi and whatever. And even if you like listen to Windows Weekly every week or whatever, you're like, well, have I gotten the thing? Because they always roll them out and but this feature is only in Microsoft 365, but it's not in the desktop version.
Right.
Oh, if you want that in the desktop, you got to download this other thing and then you got to have the right drivers on the machine. It's like,
Oh, the worst is Excel. It's like half of the Excel features don't work in the cloud version. They only work in the desktop version. So it's like, you know, but when you click on a spreadsheet in Teams, it launches the web version. And it's just like, you know, it's so,
I used to use VBA for like macros in Excel. And they didn't have macros in Microsoft 365 for a really long time. Now they do, but they do something that's based on TypeScript instead of VBA. So you want to make sure if you're doing macros on a desktop Excel, but you also want them to play in the web, that you do the TypeScript and not the VBA. They allow you to do both. There you go.
Well, there you go.
Thank you for coming to our tech talk.
The guy that created TypeScript also created C#.
I did not know that.
It's like, and
I do
and
know.
He also developed Turbo Pascal from Borland. It's like the three languages that I've loved, that I've had to write in and have loved over the years, have all been from him. Like he actually like,
I have a team at work that said they can't do Sonar Cube static testing because their code is in F sharp, which is also a Microsoft language, right?
It is
F sharp. Yep. And there's a Sonar plugin for F sharp. I was like, oh, look at this plugin over here.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that because Tony, you get extra tonight. You get an extra tech show tonight. Cause I wanted to talk about Aspire.net. Now I know you're not a .NET programmer, so
I am not.
This would mean very little to you.
Although the first language that I wrote in, that I coded in, that I monkeyed in, whatever you want to say, was Visual Basic.
Okay. that's cute. So anyway,
I'm a little bit younger than you are.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fine.
I didn't start with punch cards, Daniel. I
never use punch cards. Anyway, so this new thing came out last year from Microsoft, this new project. It's called Aspire.net. And it's hard to describe because it is a lot of things. Like it's like SharePoint, like trying to explain SharePoint to somebody, right? Well, it's kind of like
an... And you just don't know how many times I'm needing to describe SharePoint to someone.
No, but I'm saying, what's SharePoint? It's like, well, it's kind of an internal, so it's kind of an intranet, but it's also shared drives, but it's also, you know, infrastructure that's used as backends for database stuff. So it's like, you know, SharePoint is a lot of things, and it's quite broad in what it does. And Aspire.net is a collection of tools, but let me ask you this. So the modern way of writing software and just the flavor of the decade or whatever is with, you have an API running, you have a UI running, and you may or may not have, you know, like shared things between those, like common libraries that are shared between those two things. But for the most part, they're separated, right? So there's like, there are APIs that run, you have to write those. And then there's also, and the problem when you're developing those kinds of things is that you're wanting to, modern integrated development environments, IDEs, allow you to debug in a very comfortable kind of a way. Like you can say, hey, when you get to this point in this routine, I want you to stop. And then show me my debugger and let me step through this and see the variables change because there's something going on here and I can. And but when you break your programs out into two, it then becomes much more difficult to debug because if you wanted to follow something from the UI to the API and debug it on both sides, you have to either run two instances of Visual Studio with them, and that there's some inherent problems with that, and that it'll often get upset and crash.
I won't start talking about testing, Daniel, because when I did that with Leo Laporte, he totally glazed over. And then I knew he wasn't really a tech person. Anyway, keep going.
So it just becomes a pain in the ass to have to, you know, to,
yeah.
So what Aspire does, it addresses that, but oh so much more, right? So what Aspire does is that it creates a common library that is used by your API and your UI and any other things that you want to, that are part of your suite. It will give you just a whole bunch of NuGet packages, like right out of the box, like, you know, different kinds of tooling and whatnot. And then the Aspire project that it puts into your solution, just reference it. So kind of like it uses a pseudocode to reference all of your other things. And you tell it, it's like, hey, I have this API and this UI is dependent upon that API. And that API, I also have this database, this Postgres database, and this API uses that Postgres database, and it needs to wait until the database is running before it runs and the UI shouldn't run until the API are running. And so, and it builds in all these health checks and stuff and that you get out of the box with these things. So then what happens is when you run your Aspire application, it launches everything for you. And that means it spins up Docker Desktop and puts a Postgres, you know, brings up the Postgres image and gets that running and makes sure it's running before it launches the API, it's talking to that, and then, you know, before it launches the UI. And it gives you like a dashboard, and then they take all of that inherent logging that you get for free out of that common library, and all of those logs get funneled into this dashboard so you can trace back, so you can actually follow traces through the application through the logs, but you can also live debug everything. So it's like you can set breakpoints in any of those projects because you're running from this third party project. But that third party project, you don't ever have to distribute. It's only for the dev machine. Like, so you never hurt your production code. You just have this common library that has some stubs in it, right? It's the other thing that wires it up. But it lets you do all kind of cool things. Like, it lets you set your...
But are you, when you're testing, I just see... When you're testing it, like, are you testing through the UI? Are you what are you testing through? Are you calling... When you say theirs is on top of your, like... Mm-hmm. Is it like you're instantiating a class inside your, and then you're just doing like...
It runs...
Like, how are you testing it? Like, how are you, what are you pointing at? Like, when you're testing, is there a UI running? Or are you calling?
If you're not calling APIs.
Said when you're testing and you're doing debugging.
Yeah, right. When you're doing debugging.
So what are you seeing? Like, when you're doing debugging?
Yeah. Oh, you see those projects. You see it's as if you were running them in Visual Studio with debugging on. Like, it goes right into your code. And it's like, so you can set a breakpoint in the API project and a breakpoint in the UI project, and it will hit both breakpoints, and it'll bring up the code for either one.
And this, you're doing like, well, you're doing debugging, right? Not testing, but.
No, I mean, unit testing and stuff is also, you can add in a lot of the unit test stuff, and you can also have it auto run your tests and do things. So it's like, it's just, it's a nice set of tools that lets you do that. But one of the coolest things about it is let's say you wanted to add in caching or something. Like, so you have this, you know, you're running this database against this API, and you want to insert some caching between those two things. Mm-hmm. You can actually just do that on the fly by, like, in that project saying, hey, I also want to include Redis caching and, you know, as an
output. But you said this is only for your local environment, so you'd still have to stand up.
You would have to actually have a production Redis instance that you were pointing to.
So you still need those things in production.
You do, but as far as your development machine goes, you don't have to go download it and set it up and everything. It pulls the images, it spins up a Docker, it puts the Redis, you know, so like you don't have to install the latest Postgres or whatever. You can just have the Docker image of the latest one, right, with the admin already added in. So, you know, you don't see what I'm saying? You're not having to, like, when I would have to debug these things, I would have to A, make sure Postgres was running, right? I would also, you know, have to run my API locally and, you know, as a .NET project, like, hey, run this sitting over by itself. And then I would debug the UI.
Spin up your UI.
Debug. It was a pain in the ass, right?
But then you can mock your endpoints if you want. I mean, and just always have that running or like, right. But
Aspire takes care of all that, which is just so cool. It's so nice. It's being actively used, but it's like, it's
the
really
.NET
nice.
The .NET portion of the Spit Valve factory is so tiny. Like we have, it's Java, and Python now and Electrode for the, you know, web, React.
Yep.
But the .NET is like, I think there's like five guys in a closet in the back. Because every time we're doing something, they're like, hey, does that support .NET? Like, well, look. Or, you know, are you? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but anyway, it's weird. I don't have anything wrong with .NET, but just for some reason, like, we don't.
I mean, the beauty of .NET is you can just write a .NET program and have it, you know, self-run, right? So just like, it'll make an exe, like you can run it and you don't have to, you know, same with its web pieces, right? It'll self-host web stuff. So like when you write an API, it self-public, you know, it you don't have to have it under a web server, right? It can run on its own in a container, and it's like just gets into a port. So, which is kind of nice. Tim wrote COBOL on an IBM Model 29 punch card. Just,
you know the reason it's called debugging, Daniel?
Because there were actual bugs.
Yeah, there was like a roach or something, and Ada Lovelace killed it.
Wow.
And she said that she was debugging because she had to remove the bug, and there you go.
Wow.
Now solve the problem right there.
Wow. Ada Lovelace. I never programmed in Ada. Like, Ada was a language.
No, the person.
No, I know. But Ada was like, hey, I'm just saying, I know it was named after her. I never programmed in Ada.
Hey, ChatGPT, did Ada Lovelace, is she the one that killed the bug and that's why it's called debugging?
No, that was Grace Hopper, not Ada Lovelace.
Oh.
Grace Hopper, a pioneering computer scientist, found a literal moth stuck in a relay of a computer she was working on in 1947. Mm-hmm. She taped it into a logbook.
You know, that was 2 years before my mom. You don't stop. I thought you stopped.
Which helped popularize the term debugging for fixing computer issues.
Why can't she hear me?
Ada Lovelace, on the other hand, was a 19th century mathematician who was often considered
a century. Ada Grasshopper. It was Grasshopper.
She said it was a moth.
Her name was Grasshopper.
Hopper.
Grasshopper.
Alice Hopper. Hopper. Hopper.
Grace. It was Grace Hopper.
Grace.
I'm
Grace
saying
Hopper.
Grasshopper as a joke, Adam. See? Wow. You know, it's always so much more fun.
Do you know who's listening to you right now? Your Valentine is listening to you right now.
Your
buddy Valentine is listening right now. Do you have anything you want to say to him? You want to ask him to be yours?
What, like own him like property or something? No?
You know, be mine. You know, that's a Valentine's Day. You remember, didn't you?
Valentine's Day is over in 3 minutes.
We didn't talk about this, but when you were in school.
Yeah.
The best part about Valentine's Day.
Was getting a Valentine's from everyone?
Not that. You got to decorate a box to get the Valentine's cards in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you would take an old shoe box or whatever, and you would, you know, put construction paper. And you'd
be my Valentine.
Like, mine would always be a computer, of course, because, I mean, come on.
Right, yeah.
So you'd put my cards in my floppy drive or whatever. You know, that's where the,
Okay. Yeah.
That's where the Valentine's Day cards would go.
In the floppy drive.
So in those cards, they usually, do kids still do that nowadays?
I have no idea. I don't have kids. Like, how would I know?
It is so amazing how far removed you can get from, as you get older, from younger people.
You know what I mean?
Like,
we have friends that have a child, but that child like just turned 2. Like, so they're not old enough to be in school. I don't know that we have any other friends near it. Like, Zach's brother has daughters, but they're already 16 or 15 or 16. Like, so I don't think you didn't do it when you were in high school.
You only did it up to like,
it was in elementary school.
Fifth or sixth grade, maybe. Maybe not even that. Maybe just up to like third grade.
I don't know. You know, we should ask Auntie Scott what they did back in his day.
Oh, I'm sure they did Valentine's cards. Of course, they were probably Valentine's stones.
Right, stones.
They had to, chisel. Mm-hmm. Took a really long time. You hope you have a small class. Right. Yeah. That's because otherwise,
But you know, the death rate back then was pretty low. So
they had to walk through the snow like 50 miles to the small little schoolhouse and
uphill both ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yep.
it was crazy.
weirdness with the way that the Earth rotated, that they had to walk uphill both ways. All right, Adam. Tony from Illinois, we've given you 25 minutes of just
that, yeah,
the best, the best, the best material ever.
Tell us how interesting this conversation was. .NET,
Aspire.net,
automation,
Aspire.net, Gumloop. I think we talked about Gumloop. Yeah.
Grace Hopper, just
TypeScript,
COBOL.
Yeah. Punch cards. Yeah. Look at that. It's like you should,
testing.
Yeah. We should have,
like, I'm at work.
Right. I should feed the audio of this into Notebook LM and have it give me a 5-question quiz was said.
Actually, what I might do, and then I know you've got to go, is I'm not committing to this, but, but if I learn how to do agents, what I could do is create a crew in Crew AI. That's what I'm using right now. A crew of agents that research and create trivia questions without mention of politics. So I could create a researcher that would go out and research the news. I could do another agent that parsed that and got rid of all the political stuff. And then another one that took that and turned it into questions. And then another one that, and then I could be like, and every week, send that to me.
Right. Well, as we were recording this conversation and the AI companion was engaged, I asked it to give me a 5-question quiz about this Zoom call, this AKA the show. What new Microsoft project did Daniel discuss that helps with debugging across multiple projects?
Aspire.net.
Who discovered the first actual bug in a computer leading to the term Grace debugging? What camping event did Daniel attend recently, and what was unusual about the weather?
Well, it was 84 and it's usually cold.
But what and event? What
the camping event was something about bingo.
It wasn't about bingo. John and Bernie hosted it.
It was
Renaissance Weekend.
Oh, yeah. Renaissance weekend.
Which fast food chain does Daniel mention uses sous vide cooking for its beef?
Oh, it was Chipotle.
Okay. Yeah. And final question number 5. What was the score Daniel got on the Valentine's Day quiz Adam gave him?
Ooh, you got 8?
8 out of 15 is correct. Yes.
Wow, look at that.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, nice.
Guess my memory's better than I thought.
5-question quiz. You know what? Before we hang up, you should probably ask it to give you like a couple of paragraph summary of what we talked about on the in the meeting so that it can post your show notes for, so that I don't have a way of doing that anymore. Because that was how I used to like put the description for the podcast.
Can you give me a 1-2 paragraph
summary of what was discussed?
Of what was discussed in this meeting?
I would have said the first hour and a half of this meeting because it includes level 13 too. But it's fine. You can use your own judgment as to what to include.
The meeting covered various topics, including Aspire.net, a Microsoft project that helps debugging across. Daniel attended a Renaissance weekend. They also mentioned that it only knows the things that it asks the questions on.
Yeah. Excellent.
Can you want to go? Okay. Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, level 13.
Oh, I need